Shadow of the Hawk by Wolfgang Wimmers. Passage 1, Part 2. Continuing from where we left off, with Oscar and Rosa confronting the two curious creatures trespassing in the bedroom. The ginger-headed creature with the broken wings pointed at Oscar, waggling his finger with a stern look on his face.
Fwa, 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 fwa,
he said, as if he was scolding him.
What? What is it trying to say?
Said Oscar, shaking his head to make sure he wasn't dreaming. The little ginger man then pointed his finger at Rosa.
Fwa, 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 fwa.
Next, the tubby one stood up and, with trembling arms, placed a cone-shaped piece of red felt on his head. Bowing down low, he opened his mouth to speak. A high-pitched voice rang out.
Wop, wop, bing-a-ling, dop, dop-pum, wop, wop, bang-a-long, wom, wom, wom.
As he spoke, he seemed to be acting out a story with his arms, pulling faces that did nothing but make Rosa giggle.
They're trying to talk to us, but they're not making any sense, laughed Rosa. What do we do, Oski?
Oscar thought for a moment, then looked again at the broken-winged little man.
It's obviously smart somehow. How do we talk to you?
He asked. The small ginger creature looked puzzled for a second, then smiled confidently. He began slowly tapping his foot, then broke into a strange dance that involved a lot of knee-slapping, feet flurrying, and a bum wiggle. As he danced, he spoke once more.
Fwa, fwa, fwee, a fwa, fwa, fwee, wa, wa, fwa, 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 fwee,
finishing with a low bow. Rosa was by now giggling uncontrollably.
Right. Well, that was entertaining, but it wasn't much help, said Oscar. What do you think they are, Rosa?
I thought fairy folk would be a bit smaller, but they definitely look like fairy tale characters. See, I told you they were real.
This is the real world, not your fairyland, Rosa, but...
Oscar paused and sighed. You might actually be right. What else could they be? A bright idea struck him.
We've got so many books about fairies and pixies and whatnot, Rosa. Why don't you go and grab anything you can find while I keep an eye on these two?
Rosa's excitement rose as she shot out of the room.
Great idea! I'll be back in a sec!
Within a few minutes, Rosa had gathered a number of books. She laid them out on the floor while the two fairy creatures looked on in fascination. One of the books caught Oscar's eye. It was a very old, dusty book with a hard red cover.
Where'd you get this one, sis?
Well, don't tell Dad, but I found it in his office a while ago when I was looking for his slippers. It was in an old chest. There were heaps of old books in there, but I just had to take this one. I haven't read it yet, though.
Oscar blew off some of the dust that had settled on the cover.
The Enchantment of Wynwood Heights, he read out loud. See, Oski, Wynwood Heights. It's got to have something in it that can help us.
Okay, sis, you're right. It's as good a place as any to start. Oscar carefully opened the book to the first page. There, in tiny lettering, was a dedication. He read it out aloud.
To Johann, my partner in great adventure. May we sing and rhyme till the ends of time. King Cullum Stoutwhisker.
Oscar's eyes brightened.
Did you know our great-grandfather's name was Johann Rosa? Maybe this book was his.
He flicked through the pages.
It's all poetry.
Closing the book, he sat back and thought for a moment. Meanwhile, the tubbier of the two creatures had shuffled a little closer to the two children. He pointed at the book, nodding eagerly. Looking back at him a bit skeptically, Oscar said,
Okay, I guess we should just read some.
Yes, go on, Oscar. Read out one of the poems,
said Rosa, who was by now wriggling about in overexcitement. Opening the book once more, this time to the first poem, Oscar began reading out loud.
The hidden voice. The smallest of voices alone can be heard, deep in the forest of old Winwood Hill. A whispering twitter, the peep of a bird, the words of a fairy, if you have the will. Open your mind to the folk of the wild. Start with the beat of your heart. Truly believe in your own inner child for the magical doorways to part.
As he read, both children felt the hairs on the back of their necks stand up and goosebumps rise on their arms. Rosa shuffled closer and continued with the last verse.
The smallest of voices alone can be heard, deep in the forests of time. Ready yourself for adventure, and speak in the language of rhyme.
You did it!
Cried out a surprisingly gruff voice from the littlest creature.
At least I think you did. Did you do it? Can you understand me now?
Yes!
Squealed Rosa. Oscar shook his head in disbelief. So it worked, but how? How does it work? And who are you? And what are you doing here in my sister's room? The younger creature, the tubby one, now stepped forward too, straightening his felt hat.
Well, by speaking to us in poetry or rhyme, you have broken the magical barrier that usually divides humans and fairy folk. Now, when you talk to us, you're really speaking in rhyme, in our language, which is magical and rhythmical and very ancient. But to you, it still sounds like you're speaking normally, and you can also now understand us, even though we're actually speaking in rhyme. Well, most of the time, it's difficult to explain, but it works. But basically, we hear you in our language, and you hear us in yours.
Oscar and Rosa took so long trying to get their heads around this explanation that the ensuing silence became a bit awkward. The little creature seemed pleasant enough, although his stutter made him seem a little anxious. But this was all far too strange for Oscar to take in. He remained on his guard, but finally broke the silence. I think I get it, he said, doubtfully, casting a puzzled look at his sister. Rosa shrugged.
It doesn't really matter as long as we can understand each other now. I'm Rosa, and this is Oscar. And who are you two amazing little things? And how did you both end up in my room? Did you get my fairy note?
The ginger creature with the broken wings spoke first in his deep voice.
That's a whole lot of questions you've got yourself there. First of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Ash, and as you can see, I'm a fairy. Also, allow me to begin by apologizing for imposing. Please understand we wouldn't be here if it weren't for a great need.
Suddenly feeling a bit shy, Rosa whispered,
Mr. Ash, if you're a fairy, what happened to your wings?
A sad look flitted across his face.
That's a story for another time, perhaps.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not to worry, dear girl,
said Ash with a wistful smile. It's okay, Rosa, said Oscar. Turning back to the plump creature, he said, But back to our questions. Who are you and what are you? And why are you here? Bowing deeply and formally, the young creature began.
My name is Quilby. Quilby Nutterling. I am a gnome from an old gnome mining family, but
he looked up slowly from his boots.
I'm also a wizard.
Oscar snorted with laughter, but soon stopped when he saw tears welling up in the little gnome's eyes.
We're here because we had nowhere else to go.
The dam of tears broke and gushed down his face.
I'm sorry. It's just that we're in such trouble, and we need your help. What happened to you?
Said Rosa.
We were on a quest to find a long-lost wizard's spell book that had belonged to my grandfather. But we'd wandered far from home. Too far. We finally came to a dark cave near here and took a peek inside because evening was approaching and we needed somewhere to rest. Unfortunately, we had the worst luck. The cave was the home of a terrible troll. And not just a normal troll. This one was much more terrifying than any we'd seen before. And even worse, he was burying his treasure when we peered into the cave and looked up to see it just at that moment. And then now he's chasing us, and because he knows we've seen his treasure, I'm scared he won't give up until...
Quilby's chubby face exploded with a fresh burst of tears.
Oh, you poor little gnome,
said Rosa, moving forward as if to pick him up for a consoling cuddle. Oscar stopped her with a stern look.
We've got to help them, Oscar.
Okay, sis, maybe. But we still don't know them, and we shouldn't trust strangers, even if they are much smaller than us.
And cute, Oscar. Look how adorable they are.
The two magical folk looked up at the children, their large eyes full of hope.
Okay,
Oscar told them. Finish your story and we'll see. Ash patted his friend on the shoulder and continued the tale. He spoke of trolls and of how secretive they are, of how they will go to any lengths to keep their treasure and the location of their cave secret, of how trolls who leave their community have been known to go a little wild and eat other smaller magical creatures. He spoke of how they had only barely escaped from the clutches of this nasty troll, and of how, at the end of their strength, they'd stumbled out of the forest to find the welcoming lights of the children's house. When his tale was finished, his head slumped to his chest in despair. Oscar still looked sceptical.
So, what you're saying is you peered into someone's home against their wishes, got chased, and then broke into our house to hide.
Now both lads hung their heads.
I guess if you put it that way, well, yes, that is one way to look at it, said Ash.
But our intentions were good, said Quilby. Oscar, I think they're good people. I mean, little people. Should it be little folk?
Rosa trailed off in confusion. Oscar remained unconvinced.
Now you're here and safe, why would this troll not just go back and hide his treasure somewhere else? Why can't you just go home?
Quilby wiped away his tears.
There was something very strange and different about this troll. The strange green glow in his eyes and how that vicious he was. I've never seen that before in a troll or in any other creature for that matter. We're afraid that if we make a run for it, we'll never make it home.
Oscar rubbed his forehead. We should be running screaming to Mum and Dad right now, Rosa. This is crazy. How can fairies and gnomes and trolls really exist? Ash's head rose from his chest.
We do exist, and many others too, lad. We live in the same world as you humans do, but we keep to ourselves for many, many reasons. I know how you must feel, Oscar. This meeting is very strange for us, too. But if you do decide to help us, I promise, lad, we'll earn the trust you need.
Rosa looked up at her brother, a pleading look on her button-nosed face.
Come on, Oscar. Give them a chance.
Oscar started shaking his head,
not because he was about to refuse his sister's request, but because he couldn't believe what he was about to say.
All right, I guess. We'll help you if we can.
But one wrong move and we'll, I don't know, call the police or tell our parents or something.
He realized how silly he sounded and that he was rambling, but he felt a little confused and was very much out of his depth.
Ash reached out and placed a small hand on Oscar's shin.
Thank you, Oscar. And Rosa. We won't let you down.
Rosa squeaked with delight and gave both Ash and Quilby a generous hug. Oscar stood thoughtful for a moment.
What's on your mind? Quilby asked him.
Well, I was just wondering what on earth Rosa and I can actually do to help you. Mum and Dad are really good at solving problems, though I wonder if we should ask them for help.
I'm not sure that's such a good idea, said Quilby. We folk don't have much luck with older humans. Most of them have lost touch with the child they once were, and their minds aren't open to the wonders around them anymore. And what's more, even if they can see us, sometimes that just makes them scared and they try to hurt us.
Oh, don't worry about our parents, said Rosa. They'd never hurt you, but you're right. They might not believe us.
How about Oski and I try asking for help, to start with, and we'll see how things go?
Oscar nodded. Okay, if they don't believe us, then we're on our own. He took a deep breath and squared his shoulders.
Well, there's no time like the present. I suppose we should get things underway.
One last question, though. How did you ever get away from that troll?
He was chasing us toward a cliff when Quilby managed to slow time with a spell. That's what saved us. We grabbed onto a vine, but the troll wasn't so lucky. Last we saw, he was sliding down the stream and over the edge of a cliff.
Well, we don't know what happened to him after that, said Quilby. We weren't going to stick around to see, but as we arrived at your house, I still got the feeling we were being followed.
There was a moment of silence.
Well, if you two don't have any more questions, here's one from me. What in the world is a fairy note?
The evening before, in the chilly night air, two brothers sat side by side near the bottom of a small waterfall. Trevor was named after a local boy who'd gone missing in the woods not long before he was born. A search party had bustled through the woods wailing, "Trevor! Trevor!" as they searched, flickering their beams of torchlight over the forest floor. Trevor's mother could think of nothing more fitting than to call her new son by the same name. Trevor's brother, Grop, however, drew the short straw. He was simply named after the noise he made.
Grop,
he would sing and then carefully lick his eye with his tongue. He was the loudest frog in the woods, and very proud of it. On this cold, wintry night, Grop and Trevor sat together at the base of the waterfall, each keeping a keen eye out for dinner bugs, and generally just trying to keep moist, as frogs like to do. They remained very still and silent until Grop caught his brother's eye. After eyeballing him for an uncomfortably long moment, he abruptly called out,
"Grop!"
Trevor was annoyed at Grop for yelling out so loudly and possibly scaring away any insects close by. He shook his head, stretched an arm out in front of himself and replied with a short,
"Burp!"
It was all that needed to be said. The brothers were no ordinary frogs. All the others needed to hibernate during winter, but not Trevor or Grop. Ever since they'd found the swamp, their special place to hunt, they were somehow no longer bothered by the cold. There was something special about the place. They had grown huge since they discovered it, and not just from overeating. All at once, the two frogs heard a hollow gurgle from above. Their heads snapped towards one another and their eyes locked.
A strange feeling, as if time itself had slowed down, washed over them. They peered upward to see a large, dark shape slowly sluicing off the top of the waterfall. It spun lazily down toward the pool where they sat. As the shape hit the water with a giant splash, time sped up once more and the two frogs leapt quickly away to hide in the safety of a nearby bog plant. They watched as the dark shape made a gurgling sound, then sort of a grumbling noise, then one final gurgle as it slipped under the water. Trevor and Grawp sat still for a moment, before cautiously frog-walking to the water's edge. They looked at each other in confusion, then stared down into the deep, while the slushing and bubbling of the waterfall drowned out all other noise. Trevor was just turning to Grawp, about to speak, when in a flash two long and sinewy arms shot out of the water. The powerful arms grasped each of the brothers by the back of their neck, a frog's soft spot, and they were trapped, helpless. A hideous creature emerged from the water, hissing as it held them aloft.
"Yes, you two will do very nicely, Grubble."
It quickly pinned the two frogs under one bulbous, warty hand, while its other hand clutched at a bunch of tough vines hanging from the cliff wall above.
"Yes, you will help Grubble go quick to catch the tasty fairies."
The brothers were paralyzed with fear. The beast mumbled, dribbled, grumbled, and snorted as it used the vines to tie two crude harnesses around the frogs. Stepping carefully, it placed one gnarled and slimy foot on the back of each frog and pulled the vines upward until they were stretched tight.
"Go, go, go," it screamed, pulling hard on the harnesses.
Grawp panicked and immediately leapt forward, propelling himself with his powerful frog legs. Usually Grawp was the calmer of the pair, but today he was so terrified that he didn't even check with his brother before leaping. So while the Grubble's left leg shot forward, the right leg stayed put. Trevor was still frozen in place, stunned. But on hearing a frightening chirp from his brother ahead, Trevor quickly came to his senses and pushed off, bearing the heavy weight of the grumbling creature above him. Seeing his brother move at last, Grawp leapt again, followed in turn by another pounce from Trevor. At every pass they gawped at each other, eyes wide with fear. For a few strides they kept up this lurching pace, with the grubble clumsily galloping along on top of them, nearly toppling with every step until at last it screamed, "Stop!" The frogs obeyed at once, coming to a standstill near a hollowed-out log. Incidentally, this was the spot where the lost human boy Trevor was at last found, happily munching on a large bag of Easter eggs he had found hidden in a cupboard.
"Go together," commanded the grubble, as it moved the frogs back into line.
Trevor looked at Grawp and blinked once with his large round eyes. When he blinked for the second time, Grawp blinked too. And on the third blink, both frogs pushed hard off the ground. Rider and ridden were propelled forward at once, in one smooth, giant leap. The brothers worked well as a team. The blinking was an old trick they often used when hunting elusive dragonflies near the swamp. As frogs go, they were large, brave, and strong. But now their faces showed their terror. They were the hunted, the insects now.
"Up! Up!"
snapped the fearsome creature, steering them upward through snow, gravel, and mud toward the top of the closest rise. By the time they reached the top, all trace of the sun had gone, and the wind howled through the trees. Trevor was in shock, but he began to wonder how this beast had fallen into their pond, and why he had captured them. The grubble he clutched at fairy and gnome, while sliding down rocks through watery foam, till over the edge he plummeted steep, sinking into a pool down in the deep. From bubbling depths he stared at the scene, still as a statue, till movement he gleaned. Out shot his arms like warty old logs, to tie up some vines to terrified frogs.
Tied to his feet, the two frogs obeyed, and leapt at his urging deep into a glade. Then upward and up, through the snow and stone, they crested a rise, chilled to the bone. Below them the houses of humans were plenty, where fairy and gnomeling had recently wenty.
"Slide!"
cried Grubble. They stretched out their legs and tried to transform into slidable sleds. Down flew the Grubble, past snowdrift and root. The frog's eyes were bulging, astride them a brute. The slope levelled out, and once more they did hop, the beast then commanding a sinister strop. The Grubble crept forward, then clambered away, after warning the frogs to do nothing and stay. Grawp looked at Trevor, and quick as a flash, the brothers leapt off in a frightened mad dash. They didn't stop hopping till hopping was stopped at the sight of a cool cleansing pool. With a splash from the hop, as the last hopping stopped, they relaxed in the water so cool.